Bright Sunshine ad.
By some estimates, 70 to 85% of jobs are filled without ever being advertised. If you're in the hunt for a new job, well, how do you find those opportunities? Simply by networking. Yeah, one frequently overlooked tool in the quest to make new contacts is simply sending an email. So today, Kingdom Advisors President Rob West has some ways to make those digital messages even more effective. Then it's your calls on anything financial at 800-525-7000, 800-525-7000. I'm Steve Moore, sharpening your networking emails. That's next right here on MoneyWise Live. So, Rob, I always think of networking mostly as meeting friends or maybe former coworkers for coffee, then giving them the spiel. But that's not really where a lot of this starts, is it?
Usually not. Before you ever get to that point, you have to set up a meeting. And to do that, a lot of times, job hunters will pick up the phone first. That may be okay for some contacts, but too often it catches people off guard and can make for an awkward conversation. A much better way to break the ice is with a simple email.
Okay. Now, in that email, you don't want to just say, hi, let's have lunch. There is a bit more to it than that, right?
That's true. And it helps to understand the limitations of email. It's one-dimensional, restricted to the printed word. It doesn't allow for dialogue, eye contact, or body language, kind of like the radio. So you have to choose your words carefully, I guess.
That's right. Okay, well, let's get into it then. How can we get the most out of a simple email to a potential networking client or contact?
Yeah. Well, as with any form of writing, you want to grab the reader's attention right from the start. So the first few sentences are key. They carry more weight than what follows. There are several strong points or ways, I guess, to open an email message. One of the best, especially if you don't know the person, is to mention a common acquaintance. Joe Smith and I were having lunch the other day, and he suggested I contact you, etc. Yeah. You know, that's a way of establishing credibility with the reader. Another way is to convey something of common interest, like a news item related to that person's field. You could say, I read in the Wall Street Journal that hula hoops are making a comeback. You get the idea.
And unfortunately, I remember hula hoops. I had a red and yellow one. Okay, now that you have the reader's attention, then what?
Well, as you continue, keep in mind that brevity is beautiful. Craft your message with the fewest words possible and make it specific to the reader. Avoid the temptation to use boilerplate material, copying and pasting from emails you've sent other people. Make it personal. Granted, that can be difficult when you don't know the person you're writing. A good practice is to check LinkedIn for details about the individual, like achievements. Maybe you can use that in your email. I understand that your team was responsible for reducing overhead at your company by 3% last year, something that you saw in the LinkedIn profile.
Okay, I like that. Okay, let them know that you know who they are and you've done your homework, huh?
That's exactly right. And the more specific you are, the more personal your message. But avoid overused lines like, I hope you're doing well, or just checking in. That'll make the reader want to check out, perhaps. Now, you're getting to the real point of your email, which is the ask. The trick with any form of networking is to turn this completely around. And if it's genuine, make it an offer. So first, instead of saying that you're looking for a job, mention that you have contacts in your reader's field and you'd be willing to make introductions or pass information on to them. In other words, how can I be of service to you? When you make it about the other person, it removes the burden perhaps you feel in asking someone else for help.
Okay, but now at some point you actually do need to ask for some help or assistance, right?
Right, and you're ready to do that about now. Make it short and sweet, just a line or two explaining your situation. Maybe you're looking for a new job in your field or you'd like to move over into another career field. Tell them you'd appreciate any contacts or information they could pass along.
Okay, and then that's it. I wait for a response.
Not quite. I would end by saying that you'd like to follow up with a phone call and ask if that would be okay. The whole idea here is to make important contacts that will help you and others. And you do that by establishing relationships, which is difficult with email alone. So that's why I would always try to take it to the next level. If the follow-up phone call works out, offer to meet for coffee. If the person is in your area, if not, maybe you can arrange a Skype or Zoom call. That's certainly more common these days in light of the pandemic.
Okay. All right. Well, some great information from Rob West, particularly if you're on the look for a new job, a new position, a new career. He's Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. Your call's next at 800-525-7000. I hope you'll stick around.
Money and life run on the same track. But unfortunately, sometimes it seems like your money is heading in a different direction from your goals. In Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment, author Ron Blue helps you to break down all your financial options to a basic four, and then shows you how to keep it all chugging along in the right direction on the same track. Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment, available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
If you need investing guidance, you probably want help that's grounded in God's Word. That's the approach taken by Sound Mind Investing. Since 1990, SMI has helped tens of thousands of Christians acquire wisdom and confidence in their investing. Regardless of your investing experience or how much you have to invest, you can learn to be a good and faithful steward in the area of investing. More information about SMI and its approach to financial wisdom for living well is available online at soundmindinvesting.org.
One of America's most famous lighthouses, Cape Hatteras Light, has been guiding ships for nearly two centuries and weathering more than 100 hurricanes. So many lights that we depend on don't always survive the storms. The marriage we thought would last forever, the person who let us down, our health. We need something that's unshakable to guide us through the toughest times. Jesus said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." He is the one certain light that your heart needs. Only He can remove the wall of sin between you and God. For all your storms, dark times, and even for your final journey, there's a light that will always be there. His name is Jesus. To learn more, call 888-NEED-HIM. That's 888-NEED-HIM. Or visit needhim.org.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Hey, really happy to have you along today on MoneyWise Live with Rob West. We're taking your phone calls on anything financial you may be thinking about, wondering about, confused about. Give us a call. Let us take a stab at it. Of course, it'll be a biblical call because this program is not just about making lots of money. It's understanding that money is never a goal unto itself. Rather, it's a tool to meet the goals that God's planned for you and your life well in advance. And again, if we can help you with that, we'd love to chat at 800-525-7000. Rob, let's begin by going up to Marinette, Wisconsin. Rosie, where is Marinette? It sounds kind of picturesque.
60 miles north of Green Bay, along Green Bay.
Very nice, yeah.
Yeah, it does sound nice.
Think about it. Yeah, it is nice. It's a
good
town.
Good.
Great.
Well, how can we help you today?
Well, back in October of 2018, I made a deal with my then 20-year-old granddaughter to help her establish an emergency fund. The deal I made is that for every dollar she put in, I would match it by 50%. The one proviso that I put in front of her was to have access to her financial accounts electronically, and she said, okay. She had $500 in that account, but then she wanted to make a payment to to her college classes because she's trying to become an RN. So I said, okay. But right now she's got 50% or $50 in her regular savings account, also in her emergency account and her checking account, and she has a $1,000 credit card with a current balance of $954. So you can see she's pretty maxed out.
Yes.
She is on furlough as a CNA from a nearby hospital, but she holds down two jobs in the interim. My problem is what she's spending her money on is lots of fast foods and what I consider to be non-essential items.
Sure.
My question is, should I speak with her about her finances, I have in the past, or simply let her learn life's hard lessons on her own?
Yeah. Wow. This is a great question. And Rosie, I'm delighted to hear that the approach that you've taken on this, really wanting to be helpful here, you know, so often, especially when it's a loved one, we can get in there and want to fix the problems. And you've already alluded to the fact that you're willing to exercise some tough love here if that's the best case scenario. And you were incenting her to save, which I love that idea. You know, no matter how you do it, and, you know, there's a variety of approaches, you were giving her 50% on top of everything she put into her emergency fund just to kind of reinforce these disciplines and habits that you want her to develop. That's fabulous. Obviously, though, I think the key right now for her is to learn how to live within her means, which is really the building block. Once we get past God owns it all and money is a tool and the importance of holding it loosely and being generous, spending less than you earn is right there with those. And that's really going to be the foundation to her financial success moving forward, because without living within your means, it just nothing else works. So we need to find a way to really help her dial into that spending plan and see, you know, obviously she has limited resources and, you know, it doesn't mean that she can't eat out, but she needs to have a line item for that in the budget. And she probably needs to use an envelope system, either digital or physical. And when the money's gone, it's gone and she's back to peanut butter and jelly, you know, if that's the case. So I think given the fact that you have been an active participant, you've taken an active role in her finances, she gave you permission and access to her accounts as a result of this incentive you gave her, which was fabulous. I think you certainly have the right to speak into it, and I would encourage you to do so because of the foundation of this relationship that you have. And so I'd sit her down and just say, listen, you know, I want to help. I've noticed a couple of things. I appreciate you giving me access. You've noticed that I've wanted to be helpful here financially and try to help you develop the right habits. But I also have noticed another piece of this, which is this credit card debt. And, you know, it may seem manageable now, but they're going to continue to raise the limit on those cards because, you know, it's something I like to call debt mountain. They're going to start you with a small limit until you charge it up, and then they're going to increase it a little bit and tell you congratulations, you've been managing your money well, which basically just means you're carrying a balance. And then they're going to keep pushing that limit higher and higher and higher until you're just making minimum payments. And even better, they're collecting some over limit fees and some late payments, and that's where they really start making money. We don't want her to get pulled into that cycle of using debt to fund a lifestyle that she can't afford. So I would have that conversation, and I would encourage her either with you, if she wants, to develop that spending plan, and perhaps you be that kind of objective voice looking over it, helping her crafting it, or connecting with one of our MoneyWise coaches to help her put that spending plan in place. But the bottom line is every dollar needs a name. We need to have a place that it's going. And it doesn't mean that it has to be limiting. A budget actually is freeing. It's just that we are spending money in the ways that align with our values and our priorities, and we don't spend outside of what God has provided, which is what credit cards allow us to do. And then perhaps you incent her for not saving, but for living within her means. You know, perhaps, you know, you're willing to give some credit toward paying down the credit cards if she lives on her budget and, you know, creates some margin. And then for every dollar beyond the minimum payment she sends, you know, to the credit card to get it paid off, maybe you're going to match that instead of matching savings. Pray through that and think through it. But I think the bottom line is, given, you know, how you've approached this in the past, given some of your concerns about not wanting to just bail her out, I'm confident you'll come up with the right approach on this as you move forward. Does that all make sense, though?
Oh, sure. sure does. And that's a very good alternative to what I, you know, was thinking of doing, but I don't want to enable her, this trend.
Exactly. Right.
I need to stop that.
Exactly. And so the incentive moves to the problem area for her, which today seems like living within her means, sticking to that budget, having a plan. And so whether you want to help her or you want to connect with one of our coaches at moneywiselive.org, either way, I think she needs to develop some real disciplines and habits in this area of a spending plan.
Yeah, but we're glad that you have that relationship, Rosie. And, you know, if ever you're wondering, if ever you're concerned, you know, err toward the lighter side, because you don't want to lose the relationship by being overbearing. Not that you ever would be, but sometimes, you know, people see it that way or they start to withdraw. And so you always want to keep that relationship open. And with her working two jobs and everything, it does sound like she's responsible and heading in the right direction. And we're glad you called. Thanks. Let's go out to East Texas. Joe, we have just a couple of minutes. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have a question about tithing on my mother's income. She's in a facility, and I take care of all of her banking, and she does have some income. And I was just wondering what your opinion is. And by the way, thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
But your opinion on me tithing on someone else's income.
Yeah. Well, it's a great question, Joe, and I suspect it comes from a place of just simply wanting to honor the Lord and be found faithful with that. I think the key here is to recognize as a POA for your mom that really you're trying to carry out to the best of your ability your mom's wishes. So if she's not mentally competent to make these decisions, then I think you're in the position to say, would she have done this kind of given her ability to still make those decisions? So was she a tither before you became POA? And is this something she would want and expect you to do? And if so, then absolutely, I think you do that to carry out your mom's wishes. As you know, as long as it's not harmful to the estate, you do whatever, you know, she would have done. If, on the other hand, she wasn't a tither, you know, you would know that, you know, perhaps she wasn't really a giver. And, you know, I wouldn't take it upon yourself to make her one. Again, you're the trustee for her. At some point, if this money is passed to you in inheritance, now you're the steward responsible before the Lord to make the decisions. But I think in this case with a POA, it's really more about what would my mom want me to do if she was able to do it for herself. And then to the best of my ability, I want to reflect that in the decisions I make. At least that's my perspective. Tell me your thoughts, though, Joe.
That's great. That's great advice, and that helps me. That helps me so much to make my decision.
Very good. Yes. Well, we appreciate your call. Thank you so much. You stay safe there in East Texas.
Thanks very much, Joe. And yeah, and God bless you. And obviously, that's a great question, Rob. Was she a tither and a giver and a generous person beforehand? And if so, more than likely, that's what she would want you to do for her. But if she wasn't, it's still her money. You don't have total and complete control in a situation like that one.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's the role of a steward to reflect the owner's wishes, which is what we should do with the Lord when he entrusts money to us.
Amen. You're listening to MoneyWise Live. He's Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. Mary and Becky, we're coming in your direction. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Do you know if you have enough? Enough money? Enough house? Do you know how much is enough? If not, Ron Blue can help with his book, Master Your Money, a step-by-step plan for experiencing financial contentment. Learn how to save, invest, and give wisely, how to create a long-term financial plan, and how to get out of debt. You'll find it all in Master Your Money by Ron Blue. Available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." Here's Beth Moore with a quick word.
First John, you'll find that just before Revelation. The best way to get to it is to go to Revelation, start backing up, go through Jude, go through 3rd, 2nd, 1st John, and there you'll have it. Chapter 4 says this. I think I want to pull up to about 16, 1 John 4:16. And so we know and rely on the love God has for us. This is where we get really messed up, is if we don't. Because can we receive that we're really not under condemnation? Can we really know and rely on the love God has for us? God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God and God in him. In this way, love is made complete. Now, this is where it echoes our lesson today. Among us, so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. Because in this world, we are like him. There is no fear in love. But perfect love drives out fear. Because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. See, if we could get out from under that destructive feeling, if our motivation for obedience is just that we're scared to death not to, that will only last so long. There's a holy fear of God, but there's got to be another motivation if we're going to keep that thing sustained in the long haul.
You've been listening to Beth Moore with a quick word. Beth would love for you to tune in each Tuesday night for Bible study. Classes begin at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 Central on TBN. Maybe you had to miss a Tuesday. No problem. Go to BethMoore.org. That's BethMoore.org. You can watch the latest episode of her television program and more. Again, that's BethMoore.org. See you next time for another Quick Word with Beth Moore.
The financial wealth you leave behind could be the best thing that ever happened to your loved ones, or the worst. In Splitting Heirs, giving your money and things to your children without ruining their lives, Ron Blue explains why it's important to make these decisions now, instead of forcing your heirs to do it later. Splitting Heirs will foster a real appreciation for the precious resources that God has entrusted to you. And it's available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Pleased as punch to have you out there today. And as a matter of fact, we have 1, 2, 3 open lines, which means if you've been considering making that call, but not quite sure if you really want to do it today, you'd help us out, not to mention our engineers and all the people working behind the scenes. You'd help them by filling that phone line right now, 800-525-7000. And, Rob, is today the day we give away the grand prize later in the program?
You know, I don't think so.
No? Okay. Well,
no.
All right, maybe tomorrow. Yeah. But we will give you, to the best of our ability, the best advice we have. So 800-525-7000, Tampa, Florida. Mary, we know you've been holding, and we appreciate that. And what's on your mind?
Yes, I need your help because I'm at a dilemma.
Okay. Right.
I've been tied into a contract for 10 years with a life insurance company. I have two IRAs and a Roth IRA in there. So I've got like $100,000 in there, and I've been trying to wait it out. My 2 years will be up in 2022. But now I was thinking about moving that money out of there. I'm going to be penalized for about $3,000. But I want to put it in Edward Jones, I would say. And because with this 10-year contract, I've gotten myself into a mess with this life insurance company. They've capped me in where I can only make as much as 2% in some accounts and 3% in others. And I just feel like they're making all the money. I'm not making it. I can only get one statement a year. And I just feel tied, you know. They're trying to talk me into, no, you shouldn't surrender. You're going to lose $3,000. But I figure I'm 69 years old, and I figure that by the time I get ready and need this money, I would have recapped that $3,000, and perhaps, if God's willing, you know, have some profit on top of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is one of the reasons I'm not crazy about using insurance products, especially for retirement accounts, because you really don't need the tax deferral. You've already got it. And so although they can provide some stability in terms of the returns, you certainly give up some upside, which you're alluding to, and it limits your flexibility, which you're also alluding to as a result of this surrender charge. Mary, could we approach this? You know, you certainly could just go ahead and move it out. And I would interview at least a couple of advisors, make sure you have a good plan for where you go from here. You know, if you, I'm hearing you don't need the money right now and you don't plan to touch it for some time. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And so, yeah, you could theoretically recoup that. You need to be able to wait it out and so forth. But the other approach would be to say, you know, could we do this over time? So, you know, is there a certain amount you can take right now without any surrender charge? Do you know?
Yeah, a little bit. Yes, I can. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so perhaps you say instead of taking, you know, $100,000 right now, I'm going to take $50,000 and move it out and start investing it, you know, separately, and then I'm going to, you know, systematically draw it down in such a way that makes sense to minimize the cost associated with surrendering that policy and getting your money out. So I think that would be the next question I would ask is, could you build a drawdown over a couple of years where you could, instead of paying $3,000, maybe you pay $1,000 or something like that, and then, you know, slowly build up that Ed Jones account that you were talking about with a proper diversified investment strategy that's going to get you some better growth, especially since you don't need the money right now. But if you'd rather just get out of it and be done with it, pay the $3,000, I don't think that's a terrible idea. I guess I would just look at, could you phase it in and save yourself some money? That'd be the only question I would ask.
Okay, Mary?
Because I don't know. You can only do certain things on anniversary dates, and I've passed that where I can withdraw on anniversary dates. But here again, maybe I could. I'll check into maybe getting a portion of it.
Yeah, I suspect you could. Yeah, because after the first couple of years, I mean, you've already, you know, in a sense, repaid a lot of those upfront commissions that were earned and so forth. So those surrender charges start to fall off. They can go up to 7 years, so it may not happen quickly, but you should at least be able to get a portion and hopefully save yourself some money.
Mary, we're going to leave you with that, but if you get down the road a bit and you find that you're continuing to run into a brick wall here, feel free to give us a call back, and we hope that that little information helps you today. Thank you very much. You're listening to MoneyWise Live. We have a break coming up, but that gives me just enough time to read Maury's email. He says, "Dear Rob, where can I find an amortization schedule online, and how does it work?" What do you think,
yeah,
Rob?
Well, an amortization schedule basically is just a schedule that says how much of each payment is going toward interest and how much toward principal. The way it works, though, is with an amortization schedule or an amortized loan, the interest is paid first, and then after the interest is paid based on the interest rate and the balance, the rest goes to principal. So the majority goes to interest up front and less to principal, and then it switches over time. Your mortgage company could run that for you, or you could use any number of calculators online. Just Google amortization schedule, mortgage calculator. You'll find a number of them.
There are a bunch of them out there. Thank you very much, Maury, for your email. We'll be right back after this.
How should we as Christians think about investing? What if we could invest our money in a way that aligns with what we believe? At Eventide, we believe it is possible to love God and love our neighbor in the very practice of investing. We design investments for performance and a better world so you can invest for the future with a sense of wholeness and purpose. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at investeventide.com.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to show love for one another by sharing each other's health costs. Through CHM's voluntary health cost sharing programs, members uplift each other spiritually and financially. CHM is an eligible option under the Affordable Care Act and a Better Business Bureau accredited charity. Interested? Learn more by calling 800-791-6225 or online at chministries.org.
Hi, this is Steve Moore of MoneyWise Live, and this is the Moody Radio Verse of the Week. It's 1 Peter 2, 1 through 3. "Therefore, rid yourselves of all malice and all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk, so that by it you may grow up in your salvation, now that you have tasted that the Lord is good." That's 1 Peter 2, 1 through 3, the Moody Radio Verse of the Week.
I grew up in a Christian home.
But that didn't stop Ronald Clay from trying to rob a Brinks truck.
In prison, Ronald learned his father had died.
It was out of nowhere that it happened. It just broke me.
Hopeless, Ronald yielded his life to Christ and turned to Moody Radio for spiritual growth. Today, he's at Moody Theological Seminary.
My goal is to be used in whatever way that he would have me used.
Read Ronald's story in this month's free e-newsletter, Uplift. Go to mymoodyradio.org.
Buying a home is the largest, most nerve-wracking purchase most of us ever make. It doesn't help that you're entering a maze of unfamiliar words and confusing options that can leave you intimidated, frustrated, and afraid you've been taken advantage of. Navigating the Mortgage Maze by Dale Vermillion helps you clear up the confusion, unrack your nerves, and make the best mortgage decisions possible with confidence. Navigating the Mortgage Maze, available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. A federal appeals court has upheld the Justice Department's decision to abandon the case against President Trump's former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. That will end the prosecution against him. The Senate rejecting a GOP effort to advance its police reform bill. Resisting GOP promises to consider amendments to the bill, Democrats insist only by going back to committee will they be able to recraft a bill to their liking. The Senate has approved the nomination of a Mississippi judge to a federal appeals court. Corey Wilson is the 200th federal judge named by President Trump and confirmed by the Republican-controlled Senate. And the governor of Wisconsin activating the National Guard. That's after Tuesday night violence near the state capitol in Madison. Stocks falling sharply today. The Dow was off 710 points. The S&P down 81. This is SRN News.
Remember, if you'd like to connect with a budget coach or find a Kingdom advisor in your area, or perhaps just see all the free resources we have available for you so that you can work on your budget and some other things, and not to mention a lot of biblical encouragement, you'll find that and more when you visit our website, moneywiselive.org, moneywiselive.org. Out to Massillon, Ohio. Hello, Becky. How can we help you?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to.
My husband and I are about 6 years into a 20-year mortgage. We have a 3.99% interest rate, so it's a pretty good rate. Our home is valued at about $184,000, and we owe about $85,000 on that. We would like to redo our kitchen, and we figure that $25,000 would do it. Unfortunately, we don't have the money saved up for that, so we're going to have to get a loan or something. So we've been talking to the bank, and they came up with an idea that we would refinance our home, again, another 20-year mortgage at about 3.74%, and they would roll that $25,000 into it, and then our plan is to pay extra on that. And he said if we pay about $500 extra, we could pay our house off in about 8 years, which sounds wonderful. We would love to have that paid off. So I was talking to the bank today. We also have some rental properties, and we were trying to figure out if we could use that for any kind of leverage. We owe $11,000 on one of them, $30,000 on another, and then $34,000 on the third one. Okay. So they came up with, what if we take all of those rental properties, as well as that $25,000 that we'll need for the kitchen, roll everything into one mortgage, again, at about 3.74%. Yeah. Rentals would be paid for, and then we would only have one payment. So our payment right now is about $1,100. So if we took that, plus all of the rent that we're generating, which is around $2,300, then we could pay that off. I don't know how many years that would be, but that just really sounds appealing. But my husband's like, I'm just a little uneasy about that. I don't know why, but he just doesn't have a good feeling. So I'm just wondering if one scenario sounds better to you than the other.
Yeah, I understand the last option where they're suggesting you perhaps may want to roll it all into one. We'll talk about that. Help me with the $25,000, though. So what is your current rate on your existing mortgage with a balance of $85,000?
I believe it's like 3.99%.
Okay, and you're 6 years into a 20-year mortgage?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so I don't like that option just because you really aren't saving anything. So the cost of the transaction, you know, to refinance it and get this new mortgage of, let's call it $110,000 instead of $85,000 by rolling the 25 in, is going to cost you, you know, probably a couple of percentage points. So it's going to cost you several thousand dollars. And you're really not saving anything, you know, on the interest for this period of time. So what I'd prefer you do is probably look at a home equity loan. Rates are still fairly low. You're not going to get, you know, 3.75. You're going to be up around 5%. But you're not going to disrupt that first mortgage and extend the term from 14 years back to 20. You're also not going to have to pay the cost of the refinancing that first mortgage. So I kind of like that better. And then you can just focus on paying that off just as quick as you can as you had planned and not disrupt that first mortgage. Now, with regard to the second scenario of rolling everything into one, I mean, I realize that can make some sense on paper because you're enjoying the, you know, the rate associated with a primary residence as opposed to a rental, which would normally be higher. But the downside is, again, we're extending the term from what you have today. And kind of one principle I like to follow is to not put our primary residence at risk for a business. And that's really how you have to look at these rental properties. This, you know, part of a business that we're in, whether it's a second business or, I mean, a side business or your primary, you know, income source, it's a business. And so I like the idea of keeping that separate from your personal finances, both in terms of the books as well as the risk associated with it. Because if something were to happen, you know, I realize you could always sell those. But if you got into a real, you know, predicament, now your personal residence is at risk associated with the debt service of those rental properties. So I just kind of like, even though I realize you're going to end up, it's going to cost you a bit more, I kind of like keeping those two things separate and just, you know, focusing on trying to pay those off out of the cash flow of the business. But I completely concur that the goal should be to get debt free on all of it. So I think if I were you, I'd probably sit tight with everything you have and just add a home equity loan for the $25,000, assuming you have the cash flow and you can really service it well, and then just focus on paying that off as quick as you can, and then perhaps at that point turn your attention to trying to pay off those small rental property balances. Does that make sense, though, Becky?
It does make sense. There is a detail that I left out, that they currently have no closing costs on a refinance. So I don't know if that makes – yeah, there's a promotion right now – there's no closing costs. So I don't know if that changes things.
It does. Yeah. You know, the only downside there, and I'd want you to get a disclosure, you know, with the truth in lending statement so you can see exactly when they say no closing costs, what does that mean? And, you know, there are going to be some costs that are outside of that that they're probably not including. But so I'd want to know exactly what those costs are all in. And you should be able to get that from them, an estimate. But then secondly, we've got to deal with this extending of the term. So if you're going to do that, you know, just recognize the implications of going from a 14-year mortgage back to a 20, and that even though you're going to save on the interest rate, you could end up spending the same or more in total interest just by lengthening the term of all of these notes versus where they stand today. So just make sure you factor that in as you evaluate it.
Becky, we're glad you called, and we'll be praying that you and your husband find common ground on this. It's a good question. Thank you very much. Brookfield, Wisconsin, Aletheia, we have a couple of minutes here. What's the situation with your local church?
I just had a question regarding, you know, when churches are expanding and purchasing new buildings, I know the different churches I have been in have taken different routes, and I just was wondering what is, you know, biblical and the best stewardship, where some do like fundraising campaigns. I was wondering what your thoughts on the fundraising campaigns are, you know, and then some do like save up their tithes over years and then expand based on that. So I just was wondering your thoughts on what the best biblical stewardship for the church is.
Mm.
Yes. Well, you know, this is something that, you know, churches really need to pray through, starting with the pastor and the lay leadership to really make this decision with intentionality. I wouldn't say that you're violating Scripture by borrowing, but I would say that the warnings found in Scripture apply to churches as well as individuals regarding debt. And so we've got to be careful. We've got to understand that it limits flexibility. It limits our ability to do ministry. And so we need to go into that carefully. When I was a finance chairman of a large church in South Florida, we did a $5 million building project. We went into it saying we're not going to borrow a dime. And we let the general contractor know on the front end that if we don't have the money, we may call you and say, stop building. And they were a little surprised, but they said, okay, we'll do it. And guess what? The Lord provided, and we built it completely debt-free. So take your time, pray through it. I wouldn't automatically borrow, and I'd try not to, but I wouldn't go as far as to say it is unscriptural.
Leith, yeah, we appreciate that call. Thanks. And more Money Wise after this.
Many people are experiencing financial challenges, such as credit card debt, downsizing, dead-end jobs, and depleted savings. In fact, more than half of all divorces are the result of financial pressures at home. But there's hope. In Your Money Counts, biblical financial expert Howard Dayton shows that the Bible is a veritable blueprint for managing your finances, and you'll discover the profound impact it has on your relationship with God. Your Money Counts is available when you click the store button at MoneyWiseLive.org.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I'm here to help you understand God's purpose for your life through the eyes of a layman. All of us look to role models that can inspire us to be better than we are. The problem, of course, is that most of the world's role models are living lives that lead people away from God, pursuing the things of this world rather than the one who created them. Unfortunately, the problem is just as rampant in the church. While Jesus said that they'll know we're disciples by our love, Christians are seen as anything but loving. Google Analytics confirmed that we're seen as being angry and mean and stupid. That's not good. That's not being a good role model. Here's a convicting thought. Everything you do moves people closer or further away from God. That brings it down to where the rubber meets the road. You might want to keep score today. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everyone every day closer to Jesus. If you need help doing that, go to ROTW.com.
What are you deliberate and determined in seeking? The psalmist writes, as the deer pants for the water brooks, so my soul pants for thee, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. These words of a man whose inner being ached to go the depths, how visibly he describes his longing. My soul pants for thee. Charles Spurgeon's remarks here are beautiful. He says, David was heartsick. Ease he did not seek, honor he did not covet, but the enjoyment of communion with God was an urgent need of his soul, an absolute necessity like water to a stag. His soul, his very self, his deepest life was insatiable for a sense of the divine presence. What are you deliberate and determined in seeking? I'm Ryan Loving with Life Action Ministries for OneCry.com.
Many people adopt an attitude toward marriage and finances that it'll all work out somehow, but sadly, it often doesn't. Financial woes can devastate a marriage, but there is a better way. God's Way. Money and Marriage God's Way by Howard Dayton will help you discover God's approach to growing your finances, strengthening your relationship with your mate, and cultivating godly joy. Money and Marriage God's Way is available when you click the store button at MoneyWiseLive.org.
We're MoneyWise Live, where timeless wisdom, God's wisdom, meets today's financial choices and decisions. We're happy to have you out there today, and we're happy to have Lori calling in from Millersburg, Ohio. Rob?
Well, Lori, we're so glad you called today. How can we help you?
I was wondering what that formula is to determine when it's time to sell a used vehicle based on how much repairs you've paid out. And does it matter if you still owe money on it?
Yes. Well, that's a great question. Let me tackle the first part first. There are some general rules of thumb, and that's all they are. You know, you ultimately need to make the best decision in light of your financial situation. But some of those rules of thumb are when the repair costs start to exceed, some people will say the vehicle's value, or 50% of the vehicle's value over 12 months, then that's you know, where you should start to seriously thinking about getting rid of it. Another rule of thumb is, I think Edmunds will tell you, if you spend more than 1 year's worth of monthly payments on repairs, then it's time for replacements and to part with the car. So I think those are kind of some rules of thumb we should look at. In terms of you still owing something on it, that's not a concern as long as you're not upside down, which just presents other challenges. I think the key is, you know, if you can use a private party sale and maximize the value of it to be able to satisfy the loan, get out of it, hopefully with a little bit of equity and some proceeds that you can then roll into another car that you can afford that's perhaps maybe a little newer, and, you know, be able to, you know, enjoy not having the repairs that you're facing right now, that would be great. So I think the starting point for you here, Lori, is to establish the market value of this used car. You can go to KBB.com, which is Kelley Blue Book, or Edmunds.com. And once you know that market value, then you can decide, okay, based on what I've spent, what I'm looking at, does that exceed 50% or even 100% of the market value of the car today? And if I'm going to have to take on a loan for a new car, not a new, a newer car, new to you, you know, would the amount that I'm thinking about putting into this or have put into it exceed 1 year's worth of monthly payments? You know, that's when you really start to think about, okay, you know, the general accepted principle that the cheapest car you're going to own is the one you own right now starts to break down because of the sheer amount of money you're having to put in for repairs. Does that make sense?
That does. Thank you very much. That's
okay,
very
Lori.
Helpful.
Absolutely. Steve, anything you want to add to that?
What color is it, Lori?
It's white.
Ah, white. None of those rules apply if it's a white. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I think Rob's. How old is your car?
It's a 09.
An 09. Okay. Well, this is 20. So you're getting up there. I think all of Rob's advice was great advice, establishing the market value of the car and looking back over the last year to see how much you've spent repairing it would be the key issues there, unless there's something really outstanding or unique about your situation. But I sense there probably isn't. So take Rob's advice, and we'll pray that God opens a window, opens a door, and helps you move this one along so you can get another one without any more debt, if at all possible. We're glad that you called today. Thank you very much. 800-525-7000, Calhoun, Georgia. Jonathan, what's your financial situation that we can help you with?
Yes, sir. Me and my wife, we're looking into getting a will made. And I guess my question's kind of a two-part question, but what's the most convenient way for us to get a will made, and what's going to be the most affordable way for us to get that done?
Yeah, you know, you can download, Jonathan, free or low cost will templates from the internet. You know, LegalZoom would be one. They have an interactive website where you can put your will together. The average cost of a will, though, prepared by an attorney, is going to be about $375. And I would just say, as a rule of thumb, that's worth it. You know, this is something you want to get right. You want to make sure it's appropriate for your state. You want to make sure that you've thought through all the considerations. Certainly, if you have small children, you know, and minors at home, a will is critical. I mean, it's important for everybody, but it's critical because you're naming a guardian if something were to happen to you and your wife. But you just want to get this right. And it's more about the questions they're going to ask and the things that they'll help you consider. Not to mention, Jonathan, you can also take care of some other things at the same time. Durable power of attorney, a healthcare surrogate, you know, a living will, some of those things that, you know, could be really helpful in just making sure your wishes are carried out should you get into a situation like that, you know, in the future. So, yes, there are great options out there online that are affordable, but you know, I would just encourage you to find a godly estate planning attorney who could do this for you, and I think it's worth the expense you'll have.
Okay, Jonathan?
Yes, sir. It sounds good.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Well, Rob, since you mentioned all those, can you quickly check those off for us? Power of attorney, a living will, or a health care surrogate. Explain what those are.
Yeah, well, a healthcare surrogate's an adult who's appointed to make healthcare decisions if you're unable to make them for yourself. Okay. So, you know, that's obviously an important thing for anybody. A power of attorney is just the ability to act for another person in a certain situation, such as when they're incapacitated, and somebody needs to step in and make decisions. A living will is a written statement that really just expresses someone's desires regarding medical treatment in circumstances where they're no longer able to express informed consent and, an advance mm-hmm. directive, something like that. So these are just key pieces to have in place, Steve, I think, to make sure that your wishes are carried out in an end-of-life decision-making process, or if you're just incapacitated, which may be temporary, and somebody can act on your behalf.
And typically a general attorney could do these things for you and maybe could even do all these along with your will all at the same time, huh?
Sure, yeah. Now, an estate attorney would be someone who really specializes in these types of things. I mean, there are so many different types of attorneys that do all kinds of certain areas of expertise. So an estate attorney would really concentrate on these types of things.
All right. Great information for you. Apollo Beach, Florida. Hi, John. What's on your mind?
Yes. Well, thank you for your ministry. It's nice to get professional, unbiased financial advice.
thank you.
Appreciate that.
My wife just started a new job where she does not have a contributing 401k or any 401k of any kind. And I'm self-employed, only employee of the corporation. And we're looking to be able to contribute more than just your standard IRA. And my stock advisor advised me to do a owner 401k. Wonder if that was better than the SEP IRA, or what's your opinion on that?
Yeah.
I'm 57, my wife's 59. We'd like to do between 20 and 30,000 a year between the two of us.
Sure. The benefit of the 401k, either the owner 401k or, the individual K, they can call it, is that you have the ability in many cases to put in more money with the SEP IRA if you qualify for it, and you don't have some of the expense with the management and maintenance of the 401k. Even though they make it fairly simple with the solo K, I like the SEP option just because you really have complete control over how you set that up, who the custodian is, what you're going to pay for it, and the individual investments inside it. So, if they're recommending the 401k over the SEP, I would just want to know why. And, it could be that based on the revenues of the business, you're just not able to put enough away. And so you're better off with the 401k. But for most businesses that are, doing good business, you should be able to put in more with the SEP than you would with the annual contributions limits of the 401k and keep the expense at a minimum and keep ultimate flexibility with the investment. So I'd want to know more about why they're recommending to go away from the SEP, because I'm a big fan.
Okay. John, we appreciate your phone call. Thank you very, very much. Have a great remainder of your day. And Rob, before we go today, I thought perhaps we could mention the E-Magazine one more time, because your staff is putting a lot of effort, a lot of work into this. We just did a great podcast the other day that's going to be a part of the upcoming E-Magazine. So tell us more about it. Who's it for? What's it about? And how can people get a copy?
Yeah, we'd love for you to sign up for our brand new e-magazine. Last quarter was the inaugural edition on financial hope, but our new edition comes out next week, actually, and the theme is the MoneyWise Family. So we'll be giving you tips on raising money smart kids, preparing for an upcoming wedding, the questions you need to ask your engaged, the person you're engaged to, your future spouse. We're going to be dealing with other issues related to communication. even preparing for that first child and what you need to know about dealing with money. And as you said, Steve, our featured podcast for the new edition of the E-Magazine is with Shanti Feldhahn on a groundbreaking 3-year study she did on why 77% of married couples say they can't communicate well about money. And don't. And she identifies really the reasons that is and how to overcome that. And that's all contained in the free MoneyWise e-magazine. So here's what you do. Just head to MoneyWiseLive.org. Click on the green band near the top that says subscribe. And we would love to capture your email address. And as soon as it's out, we'll send it over to you no cost.
That's right. And when you're there at MoneyWiseLive.org, it's also a place where you can make a donation if you'd feel so led. We'd ask that you give that prayerful consideration because we are a ministry. We're a 501c3 ministry, have been now for, 20, 30 years. I'll have to do the math on that. But we've been here and around for a long time, started by Larry Brickett, and then you heard Howard Dayton, and now Rob West, your host. And we can't do it without you, without your prayerful support, and without your partnership that makes it all happen. So again, you can make a generous gift if you'd like to by clicking the Donate tab at the top of the page, MoneyWiseLive.org. And indeed, MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media. Thanks again for your support. Thanks to Courtney, Amy, Judy, and Jim. Join us again tomorrow.